Blessed are you who are rich, and woe to you. Blessed are those who are poor, and woe to you those who are rich. This is hard for us to hear today. When you consider for a moment that we live in one of the richest parts of America, that is considered one of the richest countries in the world, one of the richest times in all of history. Now, I understand you all don't feel too particularly rich. I get that. And you probably don't experience that wealth on a day-to-day basis. But in fact, very few of us have ever experienced really true poverty. Very few of us have ever experienced to go without a day of food out of literally no resources, of no ability to get. Very few of us have been that hungry to do without any of these. So it's hard for us to hear. So the question is, how are we to process this? How are we to understand this who in a sense have done nothing but be born here and born in this area, haven't done nothing wrong per se? Well, this is Luke's version of the Sermon on the Mount. This is the Sermon on the Plain. And there's four blesseds matched with four woes, each a counterpoint to each of them. So, you know, blessed are those who are poor, woe to those who are rich. Blessed are those who are hungry, woe to those who have their fill. And there's a counterpoint of each of these. Now, I hope and I pray that there are not too many people who are all four of those, that are poor, hungry, who are weeping, and who are hated and insulted because of the name of, although it's possible, and probably in some cases is true, but I would hope that there's some that are not in all four of those. But what we actually have to do is pull this apart a little, because we want to be in one of those four categories. Right? We want to be blessed. So the question is, if we are wealthy, then can we choose one of the other three? Is there something we can do in one of the other three that can gain us blessedness? Because it's important for us to recognize that this is not just a random, this is a core teaching of Jesus, which is time and time again heard throughout. So I just want to break open one of these pairs, and that is of weeping and laughter. And let me just explain. So it's important to understand what weeping is in ancient or biblical times. Weeping, this term here, weeping, the Greek term, might have been better translated or for our ear as blessed are those who shed tears for those who are broken. It's talking about having a compassionate heart, to care enough to shed a tear for others, to have a heart, if you would. So the idea of weeping is weeping for justice, weeping for something that needs to be set right. So that is something we can all aspire to. The sense of justice, the sense of weeping for things that have gone wrong and that we ought to care, even if we can't ourselves change it. So what do I mean by that? Let me give you an example. Whether we agree of a southern border wall or a fence or nothing at all, we ought to collectively weep for the human travesty of justice that is happening for those thousands of families and human beings who are piling up trying to seek a better life. That our hearts ought to be moved by that reality, and we ought to sit for that and weep in our hearts for the reality of that travesty. And then seek justice for healing for that wound. And not just sit back and hide behind some sort of political drama. That's a human tragedy. And you could go and extend it to the millions of people who are set as refugees around the world, who are literally starving in camps, or who are in camps, who got pitiful conditions that we would consider abominable. That at the very least, that our hearts ought to be weeping for such incredible, incredible travesty. The human plight and suffering that takes place. Often children without parents or grandparents. Alone, young, helpless. Our hearts ought to cry for that. Or that the travesty, whether we are pro-choice or pro-life, that we ought to cry and weep for the millions of children who are killed before they even have a chance at life. Even to the latest term of life. That they can literally be killed, and it makes no, that our hearts ought to bleed and weep for that reality that is happening. And not sit by and pretend it's a political reality. But that's a human travesty, a human indignity that happens. And that there are those who suffer from endless other types of suffering. That those who are homeless and broken and hurt. Those who have been abused. And the list goes on and on. And that what we ought to do is care enough to shed a tear. That allow our hearts to be moved by that incredible suffering that happened. That is what we can do. And that's what the Lord says in this. Blessed are those who weep. And so we ought to weep for the suffering that happens. Now the question is that weeping produce anything? Well, it ought to soften our hearts. And we ought to sit with it. And where we ought to sit with that is in prayer. And allow it to seep in and to soften and change our hearts. And this is where the prophet Jeremiah says, is that if we can remain close to the Lord and allow these things to change us, then we will be like a tree that sits beside a river, that it always bears fruit. Because if we don't, then comes the woe, is we're like a tree or a bush that's planted in a desert land, a volcanic lava wasteland. That our hearts ought to be moved with compassion for the suffering. So today, for those of us who may not seem terribly wealthy, but in fact are compared to the wealth of the world, let us lean on our hearts and listen to the plight of so much suffering in our world and allow our hearts to be softened, to weep for those who suffer such terrible injustices for no reason other than they've been born in the wrong places or ever even born at all. Today we come to let our hearts weep for justice.